Hi, everybody. During the months of March and April, we are highlighting the work of Rios to Rivers in our community effort to showcase organizations who are working towards social justice, environmental action, and more inclusive public lands.
Rios to Rivers inspires the protection of rivers worldwide by investing in underserved and indigenous youth who are intimately connected to their local waters and support them in their development as the next generation of environmental stewards.
Founded in 2012, Rios to Rivers programs have connected 234 underserved and indigenous students from 20 endangered river basins in 7 countries. The programs have included students and community leaders from 21 indigenous nations.
Rios to Rivers envisions a world in which youth who are intimately connected to their local waters and tribal communities are equipped to become the next generation of passionate leaders for healthy rivers and communities.
Make monthly charitable giving a trend in your life in 2024 and help to support Rios to Rivers this March and April. Visit the link in our Instagram bio for more information.
Check 1, 2.
We already did that, girl.
Season 6.
We did that season 6. We did that 5 minutes ago.
So yeah, welcome to season 6 of our show.
Hurrah.
I mean, you heard our last episode, obviously, if you tuned in to our trail map, and you got to learn all about the parks that are going to be a part of season 6. And our first is Mammoth Cave. That was
started,
a lot of different accents.
You started out from I'd say maybe South London, and then you migrated over to like Perth. Wait, that's in Australia,
yeah,
right?
Mm-hmm,
yeah, something like that.
Mm-hmm. I did. It was like an accent roller coaster there.
You were like Adele, and then suddenly Olivia Newton-John.
Mm-hmm.
May she rest in peace.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we are starting with Mammoth Cave. Yeah, tell me what your relationships to tight spaces are. And claustrophobia. I'm going to also add and claustrophobia.
And claustrophobia.
Otherwise, this becomes a much less clean podcast.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure we could dive deep into the conversation about tight spaces. Okay, so tight spaces and claustrophobia. It's not like a debilitating fear. It doesn't like, you know, coat my entire experience in dread the way that heights does.
Mm-hmm.
Don't love them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, I feel like I've told this story on the show before about seeing that movie, The Descent.
Oh, yeah.
And watching them crawl like through extremely small, narrow spaces, moving like 1 inch at a time. And then they hear like a rumble. And I'm just like, at any point in time, something could like obstruct your ability to either move, your ability to continue on, or your ability to go back the way you came. And then you're stuck and you starve forever. You know what I mean? Like,
or the cave creatures get you.
Or in the case of that film, the humanoid cave creatures do come and get you. But no, I don't love it, but like elevators don't bother me.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? How about you?
No, it's never something that has really struck a chord in my fear guitar, as it were. I feel like I've read books or seen, you know, movies or TV shows where a character is like claustrophobic, and that plays very much so into the plot of the, you know. And I'm like, I just can't identify with this because I do not. This is not something I experience. You know what I mean? Just in the same way that, like, I think for me, heights was not a thing for a very long time until we went to Morro Rock, where I really had like a
height-based
fear experience. I mean, that being said, I'm not jumping out of a plane anytime soon and skydiving, nor am I fully involving myself in karst geomorphology school.
True.
Although one day, perhaps. But yeah, there was something very comforting about being in the cave system that we were in. It just feels like
it was also huge.
Yeah.
It was a very big, very open cave.
And you'll hear obviously more about it. But yeah. But yeah, it's different from some other caves that we've been into that we'll also talk about this season. There was something that was just very like, it didn't feel confining at all. It felt like, oh, okay, I'm with somebody I know who knows the way out.
Yeah.
There's room to stretch my body. And so I didn't feel like I was too squished or scrunched at any point. Yeah.
My grandmother, she's claustrophobic.
Mm.
She doesn't like elevators. She rides on them when she has to, but she doesn't like them.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that I've had other family members who have passed and in their like final wishes are like, I'm claustrophobic. I can't be in a coffin
in a box,
for, you know,
eternity
or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
please don't do that to me.
That's fascinating to me. I'm like, I get it, but also.
Right. But also I'm a little bit like I also understand the like want to like not be like put in a dark box and buried in the ground.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know what I mean? Burn me up or make me into a tree. I get it. But like, I mean, isn't death enough? Like, I mean, what are you afraid of?
A fate worse than death? No, just death. Isn't that enough?
Looking for adventure, I want to follow on the trail, or get a little lost and let the wind fill my sails. Get up when the stars still fill the sky, don't wake the sun. There's so much to be done, and the day has just begun. Go where the postcards are real, you can feel, you can open your eyes and open your heart when you gaze at the national park. At the national park. At the national park. Follow you, I'll follow you there.
We would like to acknowledge that while hiking and visiting the land, also known as Mammoth Cave National Park, that we are on the traditional and stolen lands of the Cherokee, Shawnee, and the Yuchi people.
So real quick, welcome to season 6. We did already say that in the, you know, cold open of this episode of Gaze at the National Parks, the podcast. I'm true. Dusty.
And I'm Mike.
That's right. If you're joining us for the first time, welcome. Welcome to this space where we talk about national parks, specifically hiking trails in national parks.
Right. And other things. Of and many ilks. And alks.
Alks.
And elks.
And elks. We have talked about
we
elks.
We have talked about elks, yes.
Yeah, our slogan is, this is the show that gives you...
One hiking trail and one national park, one park at a time.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Currently, we are on Mammoth Cave.
We are on Mammoth Cave.
Welcome to Mammoth Cave. Mm-hmm. What a fascinating...
park space.
Oh.
Yeah.
There's no way we're going to be able to cover all of the fascinating components of all that is Mammoth Cave.
No.
But in short, oh my goodness, go visit.
Right. And lucky for y'all, you know, while we can't uncover or play expert to... what it is to visit Mammoth Cave, experience Mammoth Cave, know the history of Mammoth Cave. We happen to have someone who is a spectacular body of knowledge about Mammoth Cave who will be able to do that for all of us.
Who's coming to the show.
Who's coming to the
show.
Very
soon.
So... Yeah. Exciting things.
Very excited. Excited about caves in general because we haven't gotten to explore caves on this show yet.
No. Caves are something that definitely, I guess maybe the cold open should have been or could have been, what has your experience with caves been prior to our caving experiences in the national parks?
Well, because... I do have to say, before I answer that question, I do need to acknowledge the fact that if you're hearing popping, and if you're hearing loud
locking
sounds...
and dropping. Right.
There are some people who have made the choice to do fireworks in the middle of August, because that's where...
It's the end of August, dear.
The end of August right now. Outside, for reasons I'll never understand, other than they think they're
great. They want to kill birds.
But I am not a fan of fireworks.
Nope.
I'm okay if we never, ever do fireworks again. Do you know what I think of when I think of fireworks? I think of, birds dying. I think of animals, particularly dogs, who are just, like, traumatized.
Air pollution.
And I also think of gender reveal parties that make forest fires. So that is what I think.
I feel like it's a send in the drones.
Oh, that was when I was working today. That song was an Send in the Clowns was an on hold song for someone I called today.
Send in the Clowns.
I was like, wow, they got the rights to Sondheim up in here. Yeah. All right.
Anyway, what was your experience with caving before we came to caving in the national parks?
Caves. I mean, well, grew up in Mississippi. Not that there's a ton of caves there. I don't know if there are caves there or not. I never really went into any.
You weren't
any,
a cave explorer.
Not in Mississippi. Mm-hmm. However, the closest national park that we had was Great Smoky Mountains. Those are mountains, obviously. But not far from there are some caves mm-hmm. that one can experience. And I did Ruby Falls, which is a site that people go to and see all the time okay. when you're going from Chattanooga to Gatlinburg. But it's inside of a cave. So you yeah. have to travel through a cave in order to Got see it. And it's like a pretty spectacular waterfall
yeah.
that's inside of a cave.
Mm, look at you being
So that's been my cave experience.
Caver.
That's right.
Up in here.
Up I feel in like here.
That's what you've been saying a lot. This episode is up in.
Up in.
Up in.
That's right. What about you?
I did some caving experience with my brother's Boy Scout troop when I was a kid, because I think my mom was, or Cub Scout troop, because my mom was like a den mother or did something of that effect, or we just went on the trips with them. I was very young, but I do remember going to a few caves and finding them to be like really interesting. But those are like the vague past memories that stretch beyond my memory keeper's daughter's limit.
Weren't there caves in Shenandoah? Like near where we were in Luray.
Oh, the Luray Caverns.
The Luray Caverns.
But we didn't do them.
But we didn't
yeah.
do them.
Yeah. Which we should.
At some
perhaps
point.
Perhaps when we head back to Shenandoah. Mm-hmm. Lady Luray will be calling our nine.
Maybe so.
She will. So yeah, so Mammoth Cave was long on our list of parks to visit. So this trip that you're hearing about to Mammoth Cave was part of our large 10-park, 5-week national park road trip that we did in the summer of 2021. And this season will sort of wrap up all of the rest of those parks.
That's
that
true.
We hadn't talked about yet, along with some other ones that we've more recently been party to visit.
That's right. It was part of like the eastern swing of this section of our trip. We had left New Jersey and traveled sort of across the top of the states all the way
to Glacier.
To Glacier in Montana. Then we came down through Wyoming, then over to South Dakota doing parks along the way, and then eventually finally down to Missouri and then Kentucky, which brought us here
yep.
to Mammoth Cave.
Mm-hmm.
So it was toward the end of our trip.
Yeah.
I'd say like it
last
was...
last week and a half, maybe.
In the last week and a half, yeah. yeah.
In order to see Mammoth Cave, you have to have tickets to actually go into the cave. There are miles of above-ground trails, but part of the allure of this park is the cave itself. So it's something that you want to do, and it's something that you should look into and book well in advance of your visit so you're not missing out. You can book your tickets on recreation.gov, and while you can buy tickets when you get to the park, you may not be able to get to them day of, and even if you are, the pickings might be slim.
That's right. There are tours mm-hmm. that you can book yourself on
mm-hmm.
where you can
There's
see
a number of them.
Different parts of the caves.
Yes.
So that is what we did. Now, every national park is very different. Every national park does ticketing and tours in completely different ways. And
or not at all. Sometimes.
Or not at all. Yeah. And up to the park staff of how they decide to arrange that. And just because something else is also a cave doesn't mean they're going to operate in the same way. And in this example, Wind Cave
right.
Operates totally differently.
Yeah.
Like in order to see, like they're entirely like, or at least when we went there, day of, show up, make a line. And if you're not in the line, then you don't get a ticket kind of thing.
Essentially. Yeah, yeah. It was very strange. And I mean, we'll talk more about this when we talk about Wind Cave this season. But yes, a very different process for getting into the caves. So it's definitely, and again, things may have shifted since we've been there 2 years ago. And by the time you listen to this podcast in the year 2050, things might be very different too. So, you know, when we're on season 55 of this show, but that doesn't track math-wise. But anyway.
It doesn't.
No.
It doesn't.
But anyway. So we did, when we were doing our booking ahead of time, we booked two tours for Mammoth Cave, and that included the River Styx and the History Tour. In this leg of our travels, our last like week and a half, because of the scale of the parks that we were visiting in this band of parks, so that includes Badlands, Wind Cave, Gateway Arch, and Mammoth Cave, we tended to kind of make our visits to each of those parks only a day or two. We'd spent a lot of time earlier, probably in our first four or five parks, with at least like multi-day trips, like 3 to 4 days up to a week. But we were kind of down to a day or two in each of these spaces because they were smaller and they were a little bit more digestible in that amount of time.
While we do love hiking trails and we do try to prioritize them, when it came to visiting Mammoth Cave, we really wanted to spend as much time in the cave as possible. There are some great hiking trails up on ground level. They are in and around the Green River. There are over 60 miles of trails up there that one could do. And I'm sure they're wonderful and beautiful. We've heard that they're great, but we did not get to do them. And so none of our episodes will be about any of the trails up on the ground level at Mammoth Cave.
Part of the reason for that too, that we didn't hike in the park, even though maybe we would have, is that in order to get to the other side of Mammoth Cave National Park, it's sort of divided into like two sections, two thirds of it is north of the Green River, and a third of it is kind of in the south. And that's the section where the cave actually is, the visitor center is, and there are some small trails there. But you have to cross the Green River using a ferry, that which at the time was down. And that made it difficult to get to the north side. From what I saw, you could drive around, and it's not prohibitively long, but the Green River ferry does make it very easy for you to go from like Green River Road on the south side of the park to Green River Road on the north side of the park. Otherwise, you're just driving like an extra half hour to kind of get all the way around. So this was also part of the reason we didn't do any hiking.
So on this morning, we were leaving St. Louis, and it was a 5-hour drive. We had gotten up very, very early because we had a time for our tour.
Mm-hmm.
And we wanted to make sure to arrive
with time to spare
so that we could have our visitor center moment. But we were leaving St. Louis because we had gone there to do Gateway Arch National Park, which you'll be hearing about later this season. But yes, our tour was at 11:30. We were able to get up not terribly early, not as early as we've gotten up before.
No, but we were still up pretty early.
But we did have to leave around 5 a.m.
Yeah.
In order to get there. I do remember I drove first.
Yeah.
And then I think we switched.
Mm-hmm.
So we were hustling and we didn't make a lot of stops along the way. We did stop at a gas station probably like a half an hour from the park, and we had plenty of time to spare, but it felt good to finally start getting a little further east because we had been so far west in previous weeks on this trip.
Yeah,
we were starting to really feel it in our bones.
Oh, I think also just the space between things out west versus the space between things in the east was like, oh my gosh, it was like there's more people here and there are things as opposed to these gigantic open spaces, which are beautiful in their own right, but very different for an Easterner heading out west. So we sort of had an insider in regards to Mammoth Cave, and someone who you're going to hear from in two separate episodes this season. His name is Bruce Hatcher. Bruce was a listener of our show who happened to do a lot of work with Mammoth Cave. He was someone who was incredibly, incredibly gracious with his time and his expertise regarding the cave. So when we told him what our plan was, and we had been in correspondence with him on our trip because we told him we were coming, he had suggested that we cancel the history tour, saying that we essentially were going to get a lot of this on the River Styx tour and that we would meet up with him post the River Styx tour and do some caving with him.
So when we got to the visitor center, we parked and we made our way inside. It was pretty crowded already.
Yeah, it was really crowded.
It was clear that, you know, Mammoth Cave is a hot spot and people visit and people like to visit. We took care of the business that we needed to take care of. Like, we were able to cancel that one history tour. Also, this was a visitor center where you could distinctly see the difference between like the park shop where you would buy things that were in and
supportive.
Would support the park versus the shop that's just like has stuff that one could buy that doesn't support the park. That both of these things exist in this visitor center. So the park shop was over to the right. So I did get a t-shirt in there because the t-shirts were cute.
Mm-hmm. After working to cancel our tour at the desk, we also talked to the rangers. These were the folks that let us know that it would be difficult to kind of get to the north side and hike on that side. And we also got a chance to go through the exhibit here, which I thought was a great exhibit.
And it was a really good
very
exhibit.
Very engaging, very interactive. And we actually got to see some photos of Bruce within the exhibit.
That was fun. That was cool.
Because he does a lot with the park. Again, things you'll hear about in a later episode or two.
That's right. So when it was time for us to finally get to the tour, we headed on over to an outside pavilion to, it was Shelter A, is what it was called. And that was where our tour was leaving from. There are a few outdoor shelters here where tours leave from. We met the ranger to congregate with the group that was going on the tour. Our rangers' names were Ranger Dave and Ranger Emily. They were amazing. We loved them. Big fans. Really, they did let us know that the tour we were on was going to be about 90 minutes long, so to make sure to use the bathroom now.
Yeah, essentially.
Which I did.
So some things to note about caves, and some things, specifically Mammoth Cave, and some things that don't need to go into the cave include backpacks, walkers, strollers, backloading baby carriers, front-loading carriers are fine, firearms, and flash photography. So you can take photographs in the cave, but it is tricky. It involves a long exposure to allow the light to come through. It's basically has to be still. So if you're holding it in your hand, you're holding your camera in your hand, you have to, even if it's an iPhone camera, you have to be very still with it. Otherwise, you get a very shaky photo. And there's basically no way you're bringing a tripod on this tour to set up and try to take photos, because it would like hold the group up. So yeah.
Also note that while there are parts of the cave that are accessible to all people of all kinds of mobility, there are quite a few spots that are would definitely be strenuous or difficult for people with limited mobility. Also, temperature. It was very hot. This was July.
Yeah.
We had been hiking above ground during very...
For like 3 weeks, basically.
Yeah, hot months. We were excited to go underground and get some natural air conditioning. Yeah, that I found to be like totally true.
It was
so much cooler inside.
Yeah, it was like a 40 degree drop of temperature. Yeah. So it's
who was complaining?
Well, it's kind of wild to, I mean, we were grateful because we had everything with us in the car, because we hadn't stopped at an Airbnb. We hadn't stopped at our place where we were staying.
Oh no, and wait till y'all hear about that.
So we definitely, you know, had long sleeves and other things with us. So we were able to just have that, which was good, in our jackets. So you will need warmer clothing, especially if you're going in the summer, because it will be a little bit of a shock to the system for sure.
And by warmer, like sleeves.
Layers, yeah.
Layers.
So once we go over everything at Shelter A, we start making our way towards the historic entrance. So we walk from the shelter area behind the visitor center along a paved path. And this kind of takes us into the forest, which begins to curve us around towards the historic entrance. Dave stops, our ranger stops to chat with us about the rocks we are seeing above ground and how the formation of the cave system developed, due in large part to the limestone that makes up this entire area.
In case you were curious and didn't already know this, the two of us are most definitely those people who always ask a ton of questions on a tour because we're both just so curious. I mean, did you hear that this was season 6 of a podcast that involves quite a bit of travel and quite a bit of research and quite a bit of curiosity in order to even get produced? So we are definitely those people. And we were those people on this day as well.
Eventually, after winding through the woods for a little bit, we make our way down this paved path to a set of stairs, which curves into the large cave mouth, which is the historic entrance. It's a double set of stairs. So as we're going down the steps, there are groups coming up the other side of the steps. Once at the bottom of the steps, there is like a long kind of corridor here. There's like an airlock beyond that. And a lot of this is due to the fact that the rangers and the national parks are actively trying to protect and preserve these spaces for future generations. So,
that's right.
And you'll learn as we go into the cave, there's a lot of reason, especially in Mammoth Cave and especially in caves in general, why that is the case.
We entered through the cave mouth and we traveled down the paved corridor, and then we pass finally into this like fairly large chamber that is well lit.
And with that, let's take our first break.
Hey, everybody. We are actively planning our hiking for this year. And so you know what that means. Our moon travel guides are out and about. We're marking them up and we're writing in all of our notes. We sincerely love them and we use moon travel guides all the time.
Moon is our favorite travel guidebook publisher because their authors are real people who live in and know the areas they're writing about like the back of their hand.
And we can trust them. From hikes to campsites to city sites to restaurants, Moon Travel has you covered.
So ready to cross something off your travel bucket list in 2024?
Have a lot of great ideas for trips but don't know how to get started or keep your itinerary organized?
Wherever your wanderings might take you or inspire you to go, Moon Travel has you covered.
Moon Travel is the travel guidebook publisher for ethical travel.
Don't spend months trying to craft the perfect getaway when you can do it all with Moon.
Whether you're headed out abroad, planning to take on the open road, or want to wander the trails of a national park, make sure to pack a Moon travel guide with you.
And through the end of 2024, our listeners can exclusively get 20% off any Moon travel guide when you go to moon.com. Use the code GAZE24 at checkout.
That's right. That is moon.com and use code GAZE24. And that's GAZE24 for 20% off any Moon travel guide in Moon's entire library at moon.com. And that is exclusively for GAZE listeners. So we're playing Drop In.
So Drop In is a new game that we came up with this summer.
Yes. It's like it sort of lives in the world of before and after. Mm-hmm. However, it's not a before and after. A before and after would be Kerry Washington Monument.
Mm-hmm.
What
Kerry
is it?
Kerry Washington, Washington Monument.
Yep. Correct. Mm-hmm. What is a drop in?
So drop in is like a phrase that's dropped in typically between two words.
Or one phrase dropped inside of another phrase.
Yeah. Yes. So, for example, this actress who was the star of The Flying Nun, who appeared in Mrs. Doubtfire, and Forrest Gump, with the phrase that a football coach might tell his players in order to get another down.
A touchdown.
To get another, like, you know.
Yeah, or yeah. Get it down. Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. Look at us using uh-huh. our sport terms that we know. And the answer
that's all from Queer Trauma.
Correct. Queer Trauma. Mm-hmm. Things we were forced to know in mm-hmm. order to survive. The answer would be?
Sally, get the ball down the field.
Right. So Sally Field is her name, yeah. But get the ball down the field is a phrase. And it's sort of like, you just pry open the space between Sally and Field and you drop in, get the ball down the field.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, I've got three.
So Dusty's going to play this game with me because I'm tired and he's got three and I got none.
Great.
Good.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay. So the movie that gave us Anne Hathaway with this animated film by Studio Ghibli dropped in.
What is Princess Mononoke Diaries?
Correct. Well, what is the Princess Mononoke Diaries? Okay. Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Look at you go. Mm-hmm. Okay. So here's another one. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So this novel by our favorite queer sister, Oscar Wilde, this gothic novel mm-hmm. by Oscar Wilde with this actress, star of Dirty Dancing, dropped in.
What is the portrait of Dorian Jennifer Gray?
Very close. What is the picture of Dorian Jennifer Gray?
Mm-hmm.
But yes,
mm-hmm.
exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Dorian Jennifer Gray is what I imagine that character's full name is.
Mm-hmm.
And that just feels very queer to be like, Dorian Jennifer Gray,
mm-hmm.
I need you to look at yourself right now
mm-hmm.
because you're looking old
mm-hmm.
and you're not actually old.
Well, I feel like Dorian Gray could easily be Doreen Gray, like as a drag queen.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Or a Dorian Gray.
A Dorian Gray.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's very easy to do that. Yeah. Okay, great. And then finally, the third one. Are great. You ready?
Yep.
This is an almost drop in.
Okay.
Which means it sounds like it works, but the spelling isn't exactly correct.
Okay.
This iconic Meryl Streep, Anne Hathaway, Emily Blunt film about the fashion industry with a children's book series dropped in. The children's book series being not one that has a plot, not one that has a story, but one that has a tall man that you need to find.
what is The Devil Wears Waldo Prada?
There you go. The Devil Wears Waldo Prada. Mm-hmm. Where's now? Waldo Prada sounds like its own thing. It sounds like the kind of Prada that you get at Costco. You know what? Go check the Waldo Prada table, mm-hmm. because I bet you there's some couture over there, I'm sure. Right next to the bag of deli meat.
And that's dropping. Holy cow. This is a gigantic cave. Now, we had done Wind Cave prior to coming to Mammoth Cave, and we're not trying to talk too much about Wind Cave because we have episodes on that later in the season, but the distinction could not be clearer here.
Oh, yeah. Totally different experiences.
Amazing. So the first space that we enter into after passing through the historic entrance is called the Rotunda, and this is just incredibly massive. It's one of the first branches of the cave, and it's very well lit, so you're essentially able to see the enormity of everything. And when I say branches, just think about like the branches of a tree. There are different kind of paths that one could travel in the cave depending on what particular tour one is doing. And so the rotunda is sort of like a launch pad kind of hub spot for other arms of the cave system.
I think it is important here to sort of talk about a little bit why Mammoth Cave has its name. The reason Mammoth Cave is called Mammoth Cave is because in this area of land, also called Kentucky, there are so many underground caves. Mm-hmm.
Due to the geology of the area.
Due to the geology, exactly. And then basically what is happening, or what has happened over the course of many, many years, is a lot of cave systems, which is what they call caves that are connected to each other, have all started to be discovered to be connected. And so the Mammoth Cave system, which is what is protected here by the National Park Service, is over 400 miles long.
Mm-hmm.
That means 400 miles of cave.
Yeah.
Under the ground that is all connected in one system.
Yeah, it's wild.
And when you go on a tour of the River Styx, you see all 400 miles of it.
Yeah.
I say it's a joke.
Mm-hmm.
No, obviously, you're only touring like a tiny little blip of an area.
Right.
That like is big enough for people to visit.
And, yeah, safely accessible.
Accessible. Mm-hmm. They have added, you know, railings where they needed to go. They have made sure that there's the correct amount of accessibility so that people can see different spots of it. And like all of that is part of the National Park Service's mission to make sure that it can be accessed by people. But this is what they call the historic entrance. Mm-hmm. And it is a very large, huge area.
Yeah.
There are many other entrances to Mammoth Cave. This is just one of them.
Mm-hmm. In the rotunda area, there are some monuments here, which are off to the side behind some railings, as Dusty had mentioned. And there are some placards off to the side here and there as well. The space is lit with both white and orange light, which provides for a lot of interesting contrast as we're walking through this section of the cave. The lighting shifts a lot as we go through the cave, and specifically on the River Styx tour.
As we walk around this area, Ranger Dave is great about giving us context for different things and also just letting us like look and take everything in. We continue to walk through this large tube known as Broadway. The striations in the rock and then also in the ceiling are so incredible here. One might think that this area of cave in particular was sort of bored out by humans and made larger because of, you know, our interest in getting inside, but it's not. It's all nature.
That's right, baby. Broadway has a lot of what looks like tumbled or loose rock on the sides of the quote-unquote trail. It's like a path that we're on, essentially. And it almost looks like there was a rock slide here. And I don't think we asked about this when we were on the tour, but it's my assumption that the smooth path that we were walking on was not always smooth, and that it looked very much so like this loose rock covering we were seeing onto the side, and that most of that loose rock covering that we're seeing is also stuff that used to be where the path now is, that it was just kind of moved over. Because I'm assuming they weren't carting too much of the cave out, and they wanted to try to maintain as much of the natural splendor of the cave and its natural state rather than disturbing too much. And they've already had to disturb a little bit to make the pathways clear for people to be, you know, accessible in this space.
We continue on to Gothic Avenue, which is another large section of the cave. It continues to be like huge and impressive and enormous, and like the scale of this like enormous like subterranean space. So like, what would you compare this to as far as size?
For me, it's funny, like it's a funny reference. I feel like it almost felt like being in like the Louvre or like in a cathedral somewhere, and like looking like the Louvre, there's parts of the Louvre that are just massive.
For those privileged enough to have gone to the Louvre.
Oh, okay. Well, sure. Jesus Christ. Throw me under the bus of, you know, everything. So it feels very much so like a cathedral.
For those privileged enough to have been to a cathedral.
Yeah, that's how you sounded. Mm-hmm. Old and dusty.
Well, it's in the name, girl.
But yeah, it's, and especially the dramatic lighting really, I feel like, played into that here. The lighting that the Park Service had set up, like, helped you to really take in the space and give it pageantry, too.
Yeah, it certainly did all of those things. Mm-hmm. And it does feel like walking in this giant long tube. Mm-hmm. And I definitely agree with you regarding cathedral, right? Or like, it's just enormous and enclosed and like over your head.
Yeah.
You know?
It's vaulted, essentially.
Vaulted.
Was the lighting nerd in you just exploding here?
Oh, it was, because like, you don't, I mean, and that's the thing, like, it's, you don't have to do much work in order to like highlight just how fascinating and beautiful and intricate like all of the twists and turns of these walls are.
Yeah.
And they are
all from water.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. And it's all water. Yep. All erosion, right?
Yep. Brought to you by Erosion yet again.
Continues. Our sponsorship from Erosion continues. Seriously.
We continue walking down this long tube. And I really enjoyed the fact that while on this tour, while both rangers really answered questions and, you know, were there to kind of just spout information, you know, that one would give on a tour, there was plenty of time for us to just kind of take everything in and just gawk at the cave itself. And really, most of the time when we were stopping, it was in spaces that were large enough so that the rangers could address all of us at once. There was a lot of just walking and wondering and being curious about the cave system.
As we continue down this hallway, we eventually end up at the giant's coffin. Now, caves are
where giants are buried.
That's right.
Yep.
And
giants are
this
real.
This was the Jack and the Beanstalk giant.
It's true.
Not to be confused with the other giants from other fairy tales.
On your way up high in the world below.
There we go. We don't exactly know how each one of these got its name, but the rule of thumb tends to be when a new piece of cave is found, whoever was looking for it, or, you know, like,
stumbles,
if it hadn't been named yet, then that person gets to name it, and that's what it gets named on
naming
the map
rights.
Or whatever, naming, all that kind of stuff. But there are a lot of spots in caves that end up getting named, is what I have gleaned from my experience in caves. So we had come upon the giant's coffin, and it is a gigantic boulder. It is 48 feet by 20 feet by 8 feet. It's really wild to see like this giant rock inside of this already enormously cavernous space, but it was even more interesting to see names scrawled into the surface of it.
And as we continued past the coffin, we start to see more names scrawled into the rock, and some are etched in with other stones, while others are created through candle smoke, which leaves stained writings on the cave ceiling. Dave talked about this practice, some of which was done by early cave explorers to mark and map the cave, while much of it was natural vandalism, like carving your name into a tree trunk, something the both of us hate vehemently.
Oh yeah. Y'all, like, tattoo yourself. Don't tattoo a cave wall.
Or
and
a tree.
Don't tattoo a tree.
Yeah. From here, we head deeper into the cave, and this is where things start to get even more interesting, because we start to leave the very wide, grandiose passages behind, and instead, we find ourselves in a series of much smaller, tighter passages.
Now, all of this to say, we definitely weren't feeling claustrophobia too much. I guess one might feel it a little more in Wind Cave than here in Mammoth Cave.
Mm-hmm.
We did pass through a section named Fat Man's Misery. There was another section known as Tall Man's Misery, which the two of us definitely had to squat to walk through.
Mm-hmm.
So these passages in the cave definitely felt a little eerier and spookier.
Mm-hmm.
And then they definitely...
Like a theremin. What is it called? What's the instrument?
Theremin.
Theremin. You need to play like a theremin here. Exactly.
Right. And then the...
A thermond.
Thurman is from New River Gorge.
Mm-hmm.
But the lighting here was so cool because they were definitely leaning into it, and it was like very orange and yellow lighting. And
mm-hmm.
Like it was, you know, we could see the historic writing.
I think that's probably why. Like, I think that white light would probably be more difficult to see the writing,
mm-hmm.
like just because it's so glaringly like blinding.
Yeah.
And that the yellow and the orange light gives a little bit more visibility to those things. That's my assumption as far as why, you know, the cave lighting is like that there.
But it definitely has a different feel here.
Oh, it's, and it, was it sets nice. The mood. Yeah.
It definitely mm-hmm. sets the mood.
Mm-hmm. In Careless Whisper Place. As we're walking through these narrower sections, we do eventually lead back into these larger passages, which will eventually take us down to River Hall. And with that, let's take our next break.
Hey everybody, we are actively planning our hiking for this year, and so you know what that means. Our moon travel guides are out and about, we're marking them up, and we're writing in all of our notes. We sincerely love them, and we use moon travel guides all the time.
Moon is our favorite travel guidebook publisher because their authors are real people who live in and know the areas they're writing about like the back of their hand.
And we can trust them. From hikes to campsites to city sites to restaurants, Moon Travel has you covered.
So ready to cross something off your travel bucket list in 2024?
Have a lot of great ideas for trips but don't know how to get started or keep your itinerary organized?
Wherever your wanderings might take you or inspire you to go, Moon Travel has you covered.
Moon Travel is the travel guidebook publisher for ethical travel.
Don't spend months trying to craft the perfect getaway when you can do it all with Moon.
Whether you're headed out abroad, planning to take on the open road, or want to wander the trails of a national park, make sure to pack a Moon travel guide with you.
And through the end of 2024, our listeners can exclusively get 20% off any Moon travel guide when you go to moon.com. Use the code GAZE24 at checkout.
That's right. That is moon.com and use code GAZE24. And that's GAZE24 for 20% off any Moon travel guide in Moon's entire library at moon.com. And that is exclusively for GAZE listeners. Ladies and gentle them, please welcome to the stage.
Heidi Evacuate.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so this is the section of our show called Drag Corner. If you're joining us for the first time, we do invent drag names while we are on trails. It's one of our favorite games. We do have a list. It's at 1,500 names now.
That's six seasons worth of names.
Yeah.
And previous to seasons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that list has been going for a long time.
Yeah.
We invent a drag queen every episode.
And bring them to life.
That's right. And mm-hmm. today's drag queen is Heidi Evacuate.
Mm-hmm. Heidi Evacuate is a, she's like the floor fire marshal.
Oh, I love it.
And she's responsible for all of the safe schools trainings mm-hmm. that you have to do regarding
everything. Did you have one of those sashes and was that you?
I was a bike safety in elementary school, which meant that like I was responsible for making sure that kids who were biking could like get clear of the driveway.
Oh, I see. Yeah. So this is where the sort of like control complex comes
from. Wow, we are really just, you're going to find your wigs filled with shrimp.
You had a little badge, mm-hmm. you had a little sash, mm-hmm. it buckled mm-hmm. with, Yep. Oh, I see it all.
Great. Yep.
I see it all. It.
Well,
you put it on,
you
and
won't see that shrimp when it's pouring down your face.
Sense of just authority like just carry came out.
Mm-hmm. Bucket full of shrimp's blood.
Good luck with that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you here, but I like the idea of like a floor fire marshal mm-hmm. being like. Being like a inspiration for drag mm-hmm, queen. Mm-hmm. Listen, anything can be an inspiration for drag queen, but fire safety and evacuation safety, I think, is a great place to get inspiration for drag queen.
I feel like one of her looks is going to be like that blanket material that's like tinfoily.
Yeah.
That like is to
Mylar.
Like that keeps you warm after like, you know, you've been through a traumatic experience. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like that's a great like look.
I needed
like,
one of those in elementary
school. I feel like it's like, it actually is a flip down gown. Like it's all bustled up into a skirt that's like neon yellow. And then like there's a moment where like, maybe it's like a Katniss Everdeen, this girl is on fire. And
oh, I
like
love
the gown
that.
Drops.
I would also like a wig reveal
sure.
from something like that's a down do mm-hmm. like that. Or that's like long and flowy. Mm-hmm. And then it reveals into like basically just like a flame.
Mm.
Not like a real flame,
sure,
but like
sure,
in the
sure.
shape of a flame.
Like Pink's hair.
Yeah, kind of like that, but like tall and fuller.
Mm.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting. I'd have to maybe inflate.
Okay, so the scroll is on fire.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great lip sync song.
Mm-hmm.
What would her merch be?
I think her merch would be like tiny little fire extinguishers that like would actually be like seltzer sprayers.
Are they seltzer sprayers or are they like breath freshener?
Oh, Banaka.
Yeah. Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Banaka?
Yeah.
What's that?
It's like an alcohol-based spray that freshens your breath.
I've never heard of that.
Mm-hmm.
Banaka. I mean, she's a queen.
Don't Banaka until you try it.
That's right.
Right? I'm pretty sure it's Banaka. Now I've got to look. Yeah, Banaka spray.
Put her on the list. Put her on the list.
Banaka. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Banaka spray. I think her last name is S-P-R-A-E.
Mm-hmm.
Banaka spray. Or S-P-R-E with an X, with E with like a... an accent mark mm-hmm. on the top of it. Mm-hmm. Spray.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Banaka spray.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Okay, great. So maybe Banaka spray is the opener for Heidi Evacuate.
I like it. I love it.
And they have joint merch.
Mm-hmm. They do.
They do, because Banaka spray would be sponsored by Banaka spray.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, the shape of it would then be a little fire extinguisher. Mm-hmm. But the other thing is, I want Heidi Evacuate to be that fire extinguisher. It's a functioning fire extinguisher as a spray. There's a hat wearing a hat wearing a hat.
Yeah.
But a functional fire extinguisher that's small as a Banaka spray. But I want, instead of the actual shape of an extinguisher, it is Heidi Evacuate in what appears to be a costume that looks like fire extinguisher.
That is layers.
It is.
Yeah.
But it works.
We can have it.
That's
want
right.
it.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. So, ladies and gentlemen,
we know what downs are all because of it.
Welcome to the stage.
Heidi Evacuate.
Okay, so after a little more walking, we make our way into River Hall. This is essentially like a sloped room, and it's kind of like on the medium size as it leads down to an overlook to the river. And we say medium as compared to
like Broadway,
the other
or,
giant,
you know, yeah.
like cave parts of this
mm-hmm,
cave,
mm-hmm. but bigger than Fat Man's
misery
and
tall
man's
misery.
Mm-hmm. So as we enter into this hall, there's a series of benches that the entirety of the tour is able to sit on and fit onto. And so this allows for a little bit of rest and also some time to talk about the cave and the geology of the system. And I know we keep referencing that, but we're going to have a whole episode where we really kind of dive into that when Bruce is on, so I'm not diving too deeply here. We learn about a little bit more about what karst terrain is, which is essentially what the cave system is made of.
Mm-hmm. And the flow of groundwater.
Mm-hmm. We learn about the space that we are sitting in, that it actually does flood. It's one of the parts of the cave that does flood. And so there's behind us, as we're sitting, there's a ladder to kind of climb up, and there's a marker on that. I remember them pointing out like where the high water was at a specific point. So this room does essentially fill with water if conditions are right, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So River Hall is the convergent point of two parts of the river system. The ceiling here has it has this interesting relief to it, and it is also very well lit, and it almost looks like ripples across pool water at night when like a pool like light is on. Like,
oh, for those of us who are so privileged to have a pool light that they've experienced at night.
I guess so. I mean, you wrote this here.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I knew that this would all just come back on me. But,
I mean,
you know,
Your Honor, she's reaching. She's reaching.
Now I'm just being, okay, you know,
no, I,
vicious.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
You are.
Yeah.
You are.
And
she's
if you
reaching.
Notice, I have my sash and my badge on.
You do. Yes, you do. You mm-hmm. have your hallway yep. monitor
That's
sash
right.
on.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, get back to class or I'm writing you a note.
So after sitting here for a bit, we're given flashlights and lanterns and we proceed further down to the river area. And this just looks like essentially a pool at the bottom of a pit, but it is in fact flowing water. There's a railing here that continues further and further down a sloped ledge and along this pool. This is where Dave tells us that there is a sunken boat here and we're all directed to point our lights at the boat in the water so we can kind of get a better look at it just below the surface of the water here. I don't truly can't remember how the boat got there, but I imagine it was from an exploration of the cave. Obviously, the cave system, again, water fluctuates here. The water was particularly high in this sort of pool area that we were seeing, but I'm sure at other points it's lower and there are sections that you're able to get underneath what was viewed as like the edge of the pool here, but that's not something that we were able to see at this point.
Also, Dave took a moment here because it's particularly echoey here mm-hmm. in this part of the cave. And he was like, you can harmonize with yourself. It's the only place where you can harmonize with yourself. So he like threw out like three notes really loudly.
Mm-hmm.
And then you could hear the echo of all three. And like all three were in harmony together, mm-hmm. right? So he like made a chord. So we all did that together.
Mm-hmm. This is also a point where Dave is like, we're going to turn off all the lights. You're going to turn off your lanterns and we're going to experience what true dark really is.
Well, you know what that is every day of your life, every night of your life.
That's right. That's right. You know, mm-hmm. the darkness lives within me. You know, at an appointed moment, everybody here turns off their lantern or flashlight and we stand in the total dark. I believe what he had us do first is actually shut our eyes so we could kind of acclimate to what it was like to be dark. Then before doing this, figure out where the switch on the lantern or the flashlight was so we could turn it off, turn off the lamp, and then open our eyes in the dark. And it was, I mean, it's the void I stare into every day.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, it was mm-hmm. complete and total mm-hmm.
sensory deprivation,
yeah. darkness, mm-hmm. nothing.
Yeah, right. Like you couldn't see your hand in front of your face, like
nope.
even if you tried.
No.
So
it was really cool.
Yeah.
I liked it very much because
you know me.
I do know you. And also it's like, you know, they talk about how like it's kind of hard to find like true silence, right? I feel like it's also hard to find true darkness
mm-hmm.
unless you've a friend like you.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Yep. Or you're down in the underground.
Right.
So eventually we turn the lights back on and we make our moves to head back up to River Hall, which is where we return the lanterns and flashlights.
From here, we continue to make our way to a juncture point of Sparks Avenue. There are some steps here and more of like a moody orange lighting lining our path. And then this takes us to a gigantic vertical shaft known as the Mammoth Dome. So this is essentially the last leg of the tour that we're on right now. And there are some pretty spectacular views, including what is known as the ruins of Karnak.
Theremin Sound. The ruins of Karnak is essentially what is the power of water eroding the walls of this giant shaft and creating what look like temple columns. And it's wild to see. There were some incredible formations throughout the cave, but this is where I really feel like you sort of get that. It's not stalactites, but it kind of feels like it. Like it's that kind of like drippy, castle-y kind of feel.
Yeah.
Where we're really seeing that in the cave here. The wall is just very impressive. impressive limestone carving, and it's really just all done through the power of water. Erosion strikes again, everybody. But the impressive human-made feature here is the tower, which is a set of metal stairs which takes you back up to the level of the rotunda, which is 200 feet in height.
So it's metal stairs that sort of like go circular around.
It's not like a spiral staircase, but yeah.
No,
it's like
but
a,
it's like a fire
tower kind of staircase.
It's like a fire tower. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like that.
Yeah.
It's like straight up for 200 feet.
And how did that make you feel?
Honestly, like it was a sturdy structure.
Yeah.
So that didn't make me feel so...
antsy?
No, not at all. Now, there were times earlier in this, like, walk through, you know, like, this River Styx tour where, like, we would pass other shafts.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, you could look down and see just, like, this long drop.
Yeah, the bottomless pit.
I mean, it was,
pit.
Like, a yeah. narrow drop, like, bottomless pit, like, mm-hmm. things like that, that was terrifying
yeah.
to me. And I just was like, thank God this is only, like, 4 feet of this, like, yeah. walkway right now,
yeah.
you know? So, mm-hmm. And it was one of those, like, if you didn't look down, you'd miss it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
this was certainly like more heights, but I didn't find this to be any kind of terror inducing circumstance mm-hmm. for me.
Mm-hmm. The top of the tower, we're basically on a viewing platform where everybody's able to congregate. And this is where you're able to get a very close up view of Mammoth Dome. Like, we're not that far from the ceiling comparatively from the bottom of the cave or the bottom of the shaft that we were in. So it's really interesting. I feel like it's, with the exception of the small narrow sections of the cave, as far as a larger section, this is the closest we are to one of those vaulted ceilings. So
certainly.
It was really, really neat to see that.
So from here, we continue on to an area called Audubon Avenue, and it brings us back to the wide open spaces from the start of the journey where we were in the beginning. When we reach the connection point at the end, brings us back into the rotunda space. And then while we're here, Dave goes over some more about the cave, including the historic uses from indigenous people who made home in the cave to the experimental treatment of tuberculosis that they used the cave for much later.
To cave explorers. So he touched on a lot. I mean, it was a lot to digest in the hour and a half that we were with him. After making it through the rotunda, we walked back through the main entrance of the cave. This time we had to stop and wipe our shoes on soap pads, which helped to combat white nose syndrome in bats. So that was something that is very important, especially here at Mammoth Cave, trying to stop the spread of this white nose syndrome, which is a fungus in bats, and having that transfer from bats in different areas. So that was sort of our way out through the airlock is over soap pads. And we essentially continue through that corridor that we started at the historic entrance with the rest of the group and made our way up to the stairs, which is where we were supposed to meet Bruce, who we were meeting for the very first time.
Let's put this tour on the Karen Stone scale. And I know it's a tour, but I do feel like there was quite a bit of walking involved,
mm-hmm.
and there was quite a bit of climbing stairs involved. So I do feel like it deserves to be put on there somehow.
Okay.
I'm going to give it a 4.
I was going to say 3. So in a very similar neighborhood.
7 out of 20 Karen Stones.
Yeah. For the most part, it's very flat. It's, you know, very walkable. There are some tight squeezes. There are some, you know, the tower is pretty, you know, big, but for the most part, it's not treacherous terrain, I didn't find. So
now it would be fun to come up with a tour specific drag name.
Right.
That rates sort of like the context and historical information one gets
mm-hmm.
on a tour. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to come up with her name. What's a good name? I feel like it has to do with like learning and exploration and knowledge and deep diving, like the Miss Frizzle of it all.
Yeah, Miss Frizzle came to mind. But
Frizz Missile.
No. I don't know if it's going to be something that's decided today. It will have to come to us organically.
I guess so.
Not to be forced.
Yeah, because mm-hmm. Karen Stone came to us organically.
She did. Yeah.
All right, we'll allow her to show up when it's her time.
Yeah. And now let's end this episode with some Jeopardy-style trivia.
And for the folks who are joining us for the first time, first of all, can we just take a moment? There are so many of you who listen to our show every single week. And we see it and we see you and we want to thank you. We want to thank you so much for continuing to go on this journey with us.
Absolutely.
We want you to know that it's part of the reason why we do this is because we do feel like we have like a back and forth with you all. We love hearing from you. We love going on your day with you, whether that's like, you know, if you're, you know, driving to work or you're on a walk, maybe you're outside, maybe you're doing the dishes, maybe you're putting stuff away, maybe you are, you know, running errands, whatever it is. We deeply appreciate the fact that you've taken us with you on that. And that's that means the world to us entirely. Part of our organic, the organic fun that has always been sort of present in our friendship is our love for games and writing games. And we both write Jeopardy games, which is why at the end of every episode, we end with two categories of Jeopardy-style trivia.
It's true.
Because we do love Jeopardy.
We do.
So I write a category, Mike writes a category, and then we see how many the other can get.
Yeah.
So, Mike, I think I want to get us started tonight.
Great.
All right. Shall we?
Tonight, today, whatever
today,
time you're listening
whatever
to
Whatever time
it.
You're listening. Okay. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So my category is called Sticks in Song.
Great.
So this category is inspired by the band Styx.
Great. I'm glad I avoided this as a category because it was something I was thinking about too. But obviously it could have been Sticks in Mythology, Sticks in Stones.
Right.
There could have been so many Sticks related.
So here's how this category is going to work.
Okay.
Is I'm going to give you the lyrics. Okay. From one of Styx's top 10 hits. They only had 8 of them. And then I'm going to give you a ton of clues to try and get you to guess the title of the song.
Great.
Some are easier than others.
Sure.
Okay, but are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
For 100. On board, I'm a captain, so climb aboard. We'll search for tomorrow on every shore. What was that?
On board, I'm a captain, so climb aboard. It's the, like, we're birds of a feather, we stick together of my guy.
Oh,
like, it's
you're
like
thinking
the
about
parallelism of it. Yeah.
Uh-huh. I'm sticking to my guy like
a stamp to a letter.
Like a stamp to a letter, like birds of a feather, we stick together.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah. Well, a word always rhymes with itself, right? So on board, I'm a captain, so climb aboard. We'll search for tomorrow on every shore, and I'll try, oh Lord, I'll try to carry on. Our lyrics from this song that peaked at number 8 on the charts in 1977 and whose title sounds like something Popeye might shout to olive oil from the deck of a boat.
What is Come Sail Away?
That is correct.
Come sail away with me.
That's right. I do love that song. For 200.
Gathering of angels.
Exactly. For 200.
Mm-hmm.
I know you feel these are the worst of times. I do believe it's true. When people lock their doors and hide inside, rumor has it it's the end of paradise. But I know if the world just passed us by. Our lyrics from this song that peaked at number 3 in 1990 and has a title that serves as the antithesis of the first line of lyric in that selection. And it's also a reference to Charles Dickens' A Tale of Two Cities opening line.
What is the worst of times? What is the best of times?
There you go.
Sorry, what I couldn't remember what you said.
The best of times. It's, I know you feel these are the worst of times was the line. So yes, the best of times is correct. For 300. But I'll be lonely without you, and I'll need your love to see me through. So please believe me, my heart is in your hand, and I'll be missing you. Our lyrics from this song by Styx that peaked at number one, their only number one hit. For, I think it's their only number one. One of their only number one hits. It might be their only one. For 2 weeks in 1979, and has a title that is reminiscent of a book about a herding pig by author Dick King Smith.
What is Babe?
Later became a film.
What is Babe?
Correct.
Yeah.
Babe. That's right. And that's my favorite. And for 400, I've got a secret. I've been hiding under my skin. My heart is human. My blood is boiling. My brain, IBM. So if you see me acting strangely, don't be surprised. I'm just a man who needed someone and somewhere to hide to keep me alive. Are lyrics from this Styx song that peaked at number 3 in 1983 and has a chorus whose first line starts with the Japanese phrase, Domo Arigato.
What is Mr. Roboto?
Correct. Yeah.
Can't believe that wasn't higher.
I know.
Secret, secret. I got a secret.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And finally for 500.
I know so much Styx.
Right?
Right.
Styx sang a lot.
They did. Right? Yeah.
For 500. When you're with me, I'm smiling. Give me all your love. Your hands build me up when I'm sinking. Just touch me and my troubles fade. Are lyrics from this Styx song that peaked at number 6 in 1974 and has a title that could have been inspired by the other word in the name of a current reigning pop diva whose second name is inspired by a Queen song.
That's a lot of clue right there.
Uh-huh. You can get it, though. Put it together. Pop diva who has two names, or two words in her name, I should say. First word and second word. The second word is inspired by a Queen song.
And that's the song I'm looking for?
No, no, you're looking for the other word. What's the Queen song?
Is it Megan Thee Stallion? I've got nothing.
Who is the pop diva from Chromatica?
Oh, who's Lady
Gaga?
Second
word.
Okay, Lady.
Thank you. The answer is Lady.
Okay, well, pardon me. There's a very large library of Queen songs, including Stallion.
That's it. Yep. Yep, Stallion.
Mm-hmm. Megan Thee. Great.
All right. Well, it's your turn,
Lady.
Now.
Okay. Well, my category is titled Mammoth Dome, and this is all about bald men of Hollywood.
Oh, great.
Inspired by Mammoth Dome, which we passed through.
I'm ready.
Great. For 100, the glistening head of this mammoth dome belongs to the actor who portrayed Jean-Luc Picard, head of the USS Enterprise in Star Trek.
Who is Patrick Stewart?
That's correct. For 200. While in his wrestling days as The Rock, this now actor still sported a head full of follicles, but as his acting career has grown, his baldness has become more prominent. Who is
who
the actor?
Is Dwayne Johnson.
That's correct. You talked about him today.
That's right.
For 300, this critically acclaimed actor found his way into the Star Wars universe as the first actor of color playing, not just voicing, a Jedi. Replete with a purple lightsaber and a gleaming dome, his character, Mace Windu, was a fan favorite.
Who is Samuel L. Jackson?
Mm-hmm. Yes. For 400, this Oz actor turned Law and Order actor turned The Closer actor, who also played an abusive music teacher in the film Whiplash, sports a pretty good dome through many of his roles.
He was in Oz?
I'm pretty sure.
I feel like you're getting two people confused, but I could be wrong. This person might have just been in all of those things.
Yeah, he was in Oz. Yep.
So, so it's not Stabler.
No. Think about the film Whiplash.
Right. I know. Okay, okay.
Yeah, that's the actor.
Sorry, yeah. But you said this actor was in Law & Order and also Oz. But
and the closer.
Is Stabler.
Yeah.
And he's also bald.
Yeah.
Now, but yeah. Not Stabler.
It's not Christopher Maloney.
No, it's not Christopher Maloney. Daddy Maloney. No, this is, and I can't remember his name right now. He's a very good actor, but I don't remember his name.
Who is J.K. Simmons?
J.K. Simmons.
Mm-hmm. Perhaps best known for his role as Rose's awful fiancé in the film
Tionic?
In the film Titanic, this actor, who sported hair for his role as Cal, later shows up bald in the film Zoolander, where he has a small cameo playing himself.
Who is Billy the Zane?
Is Billy the Zane, exactly. And that's Mammoth Dome.
Thank you. This has been Gaze at the National Parks, the podcast, and we're here to remind you to hike early and hike often, and that adventure is always out there.
Gaze at the National Parks was created and is hosted by us,
Justin Ballard,
and Michael Ryan.
To see images from this episode, follow our Instagram at Gaze at the National Parks. To contact us, email us at gazeatthenationalparks@gmail.com. To find out more about the parks visited on this show, visit our website, gazeatthenationalparks.com. That's Gaze, G-A-Z-E.
All original artwork featured on Instagram, on our website, and in the Gaze Shop is by me, Michael Ryan.
All original music was written and performed by Dave Seaman and Mariella Klinger, with Sean Sklios on guitar. Our music producer is Skylar Fortgang. This episode was edited by me, Dustin Ballard.
We would also like to acknowledge that while recording this episode, that we are on the traditional and stolen lands of the Lenape people, also known as Ocean County, New Jersey.